Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to this teleseminar on how to become a published author. According to the recent statistics, they're publishing more than 400,000 books each year, and as we say, yours might as well be one of them. Many of these books are not as good as the book that you have. There are many books that sell extremely well that are a real surprise to everyone else. There are many books that are rejected over and over again. I'll give you an example, Harold Robbins, who wrote the books on Howard Hughes and several other books, was turned down over and over again until he finally found one book that sold, and then all of his other books were brought back to the market and became bestsellers. People like Michener had the same difficulty. A lot of people have written books and written lots of books and not sold anything. George Bernard Shaw, one of the leading writers of the 20th century in England, did not sell his first story till he was 42 years old. He wrote for 20 years and sent out his stuff and didn't sell his first story. One of the reasons why these people had a hard time is because they didn't know how to get published. They knew how to write, which is obvious from their sales, but they didn't know how to get published. When I wrote my first book, I read several books about how to write a book, written by professional writers with many years of experience. And this knowledge helped me enormously in every book I've written since then. People often ask me, how do you get published? I say, well, what you do is you go and buy books by people who've published lots of books, who've written down exactly how to get published. And the interesting thing is, since there are hundreds of thousands of books published over the years and tens of thousands of professional writers who make their livings for their entire lives writing and publishing stuff, they've written it down. Don't reinvent the wheel. Learn from the experts. The best advice I ever had, Sue, so how do you write a book? Go and buy books on how to write a book. It's a craft. It's like mechanics. It's very much like repairing your car or your toaster. You simply get the instruction manual and you follow the instruction manual. Give you an example. Michael Crichton, who became the great writer with the semi-science fiction books, he decided he wanted to be a writer. He was working at something else. And so he went out and he read the last 100 fiction books on the New York Times bestseller list, and he found the common themes that they all had. And in reading the books and thinking about the common themes, he came up with a sort of medical, diagnostic, government intrigue, scientific, dramatic type of plot, and went on to write book after book after book, which became bestsellers. Look at Tom Clancy. Tom Clancy was an insurance salesman up in Massachusetts. He was an insurance salesman, but he was really, really interested in military things. So he started doing research on military things, and he came out and he wrote his first book, On the Submarine. Jeez, my mind just went blank on me. But it went out and sold 800,000 copies, and he became one of the best-selling fiction authors in the world by simply studying the process of writing and then writing. And by the way, everybody says, oh, it won't work. They told me when I wrote my first book many years ago, it won't work. It's a waste of time. You won't sell it. You won't make any money. Don't waste your time, and so on. So don't listen to those people. So the knowledge that I got from reading these books changed my whole life. Do more of this, do less of that. Start here, start there. And I'll give you the essence of that. When I went out to get published, after I'd written my first book, I still remember, no one would even return my phone calls or letters. I soon realized that I didn't even know what I was doing. If you go onto a website for any of the publishers, they will say, do not send unsolicited manuscripts. Any unsolicited manuscripts will be thrown away. Do not communicate with us unless you are invited. I mean, they're really adamant. So when I, many years ago, sent my first manuscript in, they were nice enough to send it back, and they sent it back, and they said, this is totally inappropriate. Please don't communicate with us ever again. And so now today, they don't even do that. They just throw them away. So you have to learn what you're doing. So I began to buying books and articles about how to get published. I found that publishing is a fiercely competitive business. As many as 99 out of 100 books submitted are never published or even seriously considered by publishers or literary agents. Some say it's only one book in 200 that is submitted that is actually published. But if you can say one out of 100, you say, well, that's shocking. Well, why is that? It's because, again, people don't know what they're doing. Well, today, and I've added it up for us, today I have written and published 70 books in 38 languages and 53 countries. I get letters from publishers almost every week saying, your book has now been published in Vietnamese. This week was Romanian. Last week was Slovenian. A week before it was Chinese. 2 weeks ago it was Indonesian. I can't even keep track of them because they're so complicated. But I have books now published in almost every major language. I write and publish 4 or 5 books each year, which is a shock because a professional writer, a person who makes their living writing books, hopes to write a book once every 18 to 24 months. That's full-time writing. I write 5 books a year, 4 to 5 books a year, and publish them with different publishers. And the reason I do that, by the way, is because a publisher will not publish 2 books from the same author in the same year. They don't like to do that. I've had exceptions to that, but they don't like to do it. So what I did is I would come up with a book idea, and I would contact publishers, as we'll talk about, and I would say, would you like this book? And they would say yes or no, but I always find someone who said yes. So I say, okay, I'll give you this book if you publish it at this time. Because each book has what is called a 90-day window. That means prior to it being released, and 90 days afterwards is when interviewers, reviewers, and so on will be interested in the book, after which the window closes and they go on to the next books. So I decided I'd produce a book every 90 days so that I could use that to promote myself and my website and my speaking and other things. And I've done that year after year after year. So I'm now up to 70 books, and I have 7 books in the queue. I have 7 books that I'm working on now, all of which I think are potentially wonderful books, and all of which will be published. I spoke to a publisher yesterday, and I said, you know, I really would like to get these 2 books published. And he said, oh, all right, send them to me, and we'll see if we can't find a publishing schedule. So anyway, so is it possible? Yes, because I started off with 0. Well, not long ago, I've got to tell you this story, a woman contacted me through a friend, and she asked me to review her manuscript and help her to get a publisher. Well, because of my friend, I agreed to do whatever I could to help, because I published with about 8 English publishers, and I cannot even keep count of the foreign publishers. So what I got from her, however, in the mail was a stream of consciousness narrative where she had just talked and talked and talked and talked into a tape recorder and somebody had written it down, and that she had had been dictated to type. It lurched all over the subject like a drunk going from lamppost to lamppost. Now, I contacted her. I said, well, what do you want me to do with this? Because I want to help, because my friend asked me to, and I always help my friends. Well, what was most surprising is she expected me to find her a publisher who would take her confusing material, all of this I call it, you know, throw up on a page, and rewrite it into a book for publication. She was convinced that all she needed was an idea and a bunch of words on paper, and someone else would not only do all the work, but pay her a big advance as well. Not long after that, I got another letter from a friend of mine, and she said, everybody tells me my life story is really fascinating, so I've written it down. She'd written it down in about 10-point type, which you need a microscope to listen. And it was about 30 pages, and it was just stream of consciousness, me, 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 about myself and my life. Each person, by the way, thinks that their story of their life is fascinating, and everyone would like to hear about it, and that is seldom the case. But anyway, she said, so I'd like to publish this and become an author. I wrote back to her. I said, what you have here is, you know, some personal revelations, get it off your chest and so on and so forth of your past, but this is not a book. This is not something that anybody will even look at. If they manage to even look at it, they'd open it up and they'd close it up quickly, like there was something awful in the package, and either throw it away or send it back to you if you enclose a self-addressed envelope. Well, because I'm always open to helping writers, I've had this experience several times. People send me the most awful stuff, and then they want me to give it a line-by-line critique and helping them to rewrite it and turn it into a book. They want me to go through each chapter and recommend strengths and weaknesses and tell them how they can improve it and so on and so forth. They don't realize that this sort of thing takes many, many hours. There are professional writers, by the way, who just live off the ambitious author market, and they call them co-writers or writers for hire. And what they'll do is they'll say, yes, oh, this is a great book. That's wonderful. I'll tell you what, I'll write it into a book for you. It'll cost you $20,000 to $30,000 for me to do my writing, which works out to several hundred dollars an hour for them. And I'll write it, and then you will be a big success. So just be alert to that, because it's not the way the world works. Let's begin with what you have to do to get published. First of all, you must be publishable. Let me repeat that. First of all, if you want to get published, you must be publishable. It's not about you, it's about the marketplace and the reader. And many people think it's about me. No, it's about the marketplace and the reader. This is a cutthroat business where 80% of books fail to sell out their first run of 2,500 copies. By the way, when a publisher agrees to publish your book, they will then send out information to the various book purchasers like Amazon, Borders, Barnes & Noble, and so on. And they'll say, here's a book that we're coming out with. How many would you like to order? And sometimes the bookstore will say, we'll order one. So you have 370 Barnes & Noble stores, and each will order one copy. And then maybe Amazon will order 10 and a few others. But then they will only publish the number of orders that they have. They don't publish extras. If they get orders for 2,363 books, that's how many they publish. What about extras? No, because they're afraid that the publisher will be stuck and be left in a money-losing situation. Not long ago, a publisher was telling me about a business book another publisher had paid a $200,000 advance for, plus the publisher spent $50,000 advertising it. It was by a well-known executive. It was on what was going on in the industry. And at the end of the day, it only sold 1,250 copies. The publisher lost more than $250,000 on this project. By the way, let me tell you how the publishing industry works. Is you move up, you get promoted if you find a book that sells well. If you give the green light on a book that doesn't sell well, you get demoted down into a smaller and smaller office. If you discover a big writer like Tom Clancy or Ken Blanchard, you get a big office with a secretary and an expense account. So you can be sure that these publishers and the editors are really, really sensitive to how this is going to affect their careers. Publishers hate losing money. They hate returns as well. Now, as it happens, all books are sold on consignment to bookstores. And if the books don't sell, the publisher has to take them back, credit the bookstore with the full amount, and often throw the remaining books away. If you want to get a publisher to shrink, all you have to do is say, remainders, remainders. And publishers go, ah! Because remainders are the worst thing that can happen in the publishing industry. It means the bookstore has not sold them, the window of opportunity is closed, the bookstore has sent them back, and the publisher has to pay the bookstore what they had paid them and then throw them away. So they hate that. Only 20% of books make money. Sales of 10,000 copies or more are considered respectable. In fact, if you sell 10,000 copies, boy, you are considered to be a good author. They call it, by the way, the official title is a top-selling book. A best-selling book is one that reaches the list. A top-selling book is one that exceeds 10,000 copies. Many people think I want to sell hundreds of thousands of copies. If you sell 10 of a book, you can be very happy. Interesting story. A man named Barry Sears, who's a doctor, wrote a book some years ago called The Zone. And this was a book about dieting. And it came out and promptly disappeared. They sold 5,000 copies. The copies disappeared. But people began to read the book and pass around the copies, and people began to go to the bookstores and demand copies, and the book came back after a year because they got so much demand and went on to become a bestseller for 5 years. There was another book called The Road Less Traveled. The book came out, 5,000 copies, dropped off the edge of the earth into the ocean of books and disappeared. But people began to read it and talk about it, and a year later there was so much demand, the publishers brought it back, put it on the bookstands, and it was a bestseller for 10 years. Sold more than 600,000 copies a year for 10 years. And people wrote about it all over the country. So sometimes the book will come out and disappear, and then by word of mouth it will come back. But it's very, very rare. Only 5% of books are really profitable, and less than 1% become bestsellers. And then sometimes only for a week. I have a good friend who was an author, published a book, went through everything that I'm teaching you, and published a book, and it became a bestseller. Then he had an idea, well, I can walk on water twice. So he published another book, but this time he changed all the terms and conditions. He changed publishers. He decided he would control all the marketing himself, and he coordinated a nationwide campaign where he sent people into bookstores all over the country to buy, within 1 week, a total of 50,000 books. The books, they cost $25, so basically he handed out $25 bills and sent them all over the country to all his friends, and they all marched into the bookstores, and they all bought one or two or three copies during that week. And the book became a bestseller, New York Times bestseller, number two or three that week. But that was the end of it. The book wasn't that good. Nobody else bought it. The book disappeared, and my friend ended up with a warehouse full of books, a warehouse. You could still get them today for a dollar a copy. So I've personally sold as many as 2 million copies of a book over several years, up to 3 million now with one of my books, and I've only been on a bestseller list a couple of times, and sometimes only for a short time. So everybody wants to be on the bestseller list. I have an author friend who makes $400,000 to $500,000 a year writing. She's written 30 or 40 books. She's very accomplished. She writes in communications and relationships and so on. She's never been on a list once in her life, and she makes $500,000 a year in royalties year after year because the books sell like below the radar screen, if you like. They just continue to sell. They're called perennial backlist books. They just continue to sell and sell and sell. So it's possible to make a lot of money in book selling over time and never be on a list. So think the idea that you're going to get onto a list is what everybody dreams of, but it very seldom happens, and it's really not that important. So be publishable. To achieve this, you'll need a good subject, you'll need a good title, you'll need a good subtitle, and your book must be well written just to get someone to notice you. For nonfiction books, in my estimation, the best titles start with an imperative verb. An imperative verb is like swim with the sharks, think and grow rich. A verb that is an action verb that actually grabs attention. A forceful title grabs the reader's attention and stimulates his or her interest. Many books have gone from failures to bestsellers by simply changing the title. One of the best-selling authors in the 20th century is Robert Ringer. And he wrote a book, and it was called How to Negotiate Successfully. The book came out, disappeared, massive remainders, and the publisher sold it back to him. Said, this is a crummy book. Nobody wants it. So he sat down with some smart people, and they said the problem was not the content, it was the title. So they changed the title from Negotiating Successfully my mind just went blank there for a second. We'll have to edit this out. The title was Winning Through Intimidation. And Robert Ringer came out, was one of the top 10 best-selling books in the last 10 years. And he became a millionaire just by changing the title from Negotiating Successfully to Winning Through Intimidation. And so sometimes the title is very powerful. And the other thing is that the title is what will often grab the publisher and say, oh, I like that. Sometimes I had a literary agent who was working with an author, and she came up with the title. She was very well known, and the title was Power. And she said, I can get you $1 million just for the title. And she did. She got $1 million advance just for the title Power because of the previous work that this author had done. So the title can be very important. Now, every rule in writing is meant to be broken, including the rules about titles. But make it easy for the publisher to pay attention and for readers to buy by making the title attractive and alluring. One of my publishers told me recently that what they do is what is called the subway test. They say, will a person sitting on a subway be comfortable holding up that book and have other people see what they're reading? So that's why bizarre titles are usually turned down. But also, if a person saw you reading that on the subway, would they say, boy, that looks like an interesting book. I'd like to read that as well. If they saw your title on the bookstand or in the bookstore, would they say, ooh, that looks interesting, and would they reach out for it? Now, the key thing for a title is it should trigger the response, that's for me. I want that. I want to see what's in there. I'm curious to know what's in there. If the title does not have that kind of emotive response, then what you do is just continue to rework the title. Well, before I submit a manuscript, I rewrite it from front to back, word for word, 5 to 10 times until I'm completely satisfied. You should be prepared to do the same. People often ask me, who does your editing? I say, I write and edit every single word. I will sometimes, in my 6th or 7th writing, going through it word for word, line for line, I'll find glaring mistakes. And I'll have to rewrite it, add more material. But don't think that you can avoid the business of polishing. My friend Og Mandino once told me, he said, people say my books are really easy to read. And of course, he sold tens of millions of copies. And he said, that's because they're so hard to write. He said, I never submit a manuscript until I've rewritten it 13 to 15 times. So it's really easy to read. And of course, he went on to make millions of dollars as a writer. So I just pass that on to you. Now, to get published, write a book that publishers and readers want. Look at what is selling well, the bestsellers in fiction and nonfiction, and write books on the subjects that are already popular. You know, during the boom of the last few years before the bust, they were writing book after book after book about how to make a lot of money in every single field, stocks, real estate, money, investing, entrepreneurship, getting rich your own way, and so on. Lots and lots and lots of books because that was a really hot subject. So a person who came up with a new wrinkle or a new way of making money in that genre would almost always get the attention of a publisher who would be interested in looking at the book. So look at what's already selling. Sometimes people say, well, I want to publish something because I think it's of great interest to me. Well, no. Remember, it's not about you. It's about what the market wants now. It's what the market is willing to buy today. So to write and get published, you have to exercise your writing muscles. You have to be writing fit, as we say. And there are three things that you can do to be fit as a writer. Number one is read something every day in your field, your particular area of expertise. Read the best that is out there. Never stop reading and growing. If you ever stop reading in your field, reading the best authors, read the most successful books. If a book is really successful, read it and find out why. Look at it. Study it. Say, boy, this is a good example. See if you can't do it one better. And number two is write something every day. Resolve to write 1,000 to 2,000 words every day to keep in shape. I have a good friend, by the way, who's very successful in business, wanted to write a best-selling book, or wanted to write a book, for that matter, but he had no time because he had such a busy day. So what he did is he disciplined himself to go to bed between 9 and 10 each night and get up at 5 a.m. and take a cup of coffee into his den and write for 1 hour. And he did that every day for a year. And he was able to write a page a day for a year. And then, of course, on the weekends, he would edit and so on. At the end of the year, he had a 300-page book that went on to sell hundreds of thousands of copies. He said it was very hard, very disciplined. I had to do it 5 days a week, edit on the weekends. I had to go to bed early, had to get up early, had to be really focused. But he wrote every single day, 1,000 to 2,000 words. And number three is turn in clean copy. When you do send material in, make sure it's spelled correctly. Use correct grammar. Have your work read and critiqued by friends and family members before you submit it. By the way, there's a powerful way to determine whether or not you have a good book, and that's to read it to somebody over the phone. I learned this from a guy who sold 1 million copies of one of his books. He said what he would do is just read it over the phone. If it sounds well, sounds good, read over the phone, it's probably going to be a good book when it lays on the page. Another thing is to read it to a friend. Read it to your spouse. Read it to your friends. Many writers do this. They will read it aloud, sometimes to classes. And as long as people are nodding and smiling and agreeing, but as soon as somebody says, wait a minute, I didn't understand that, you have to rewrite. So don't ever rely solely on your own opinion. Get the opinions of other people if you possibly can. Now, if you're writing fiction, I prefer nonfiction, but if you're writing fiction, there are five things that you must do. Number one is start strong. Grab the reader and draw them quickly into the story. If you don't have the reader in the first few paragraphs, the publisher will stop reading and not publish your books. So make sure that it starts off really powerfully. Many people make the mistake, and I used to do this myself, of starting off with a long introduction or a long preamble, building up the story and what happened and so on. What you want to do is sort of like, remember Terminator? The movie starts with Terminator landing, flashing lights, everything else, and it starts and the movie starts running. Terminator 2, the movie started and wham, there's a chase scene that's going on right from the very beginning. And then they loop back and they give you the background story. Well, that's what you do with nonfiction. You've got to get the reader really into it. Then you can give the background information. Number two, trim it down and make it clean. Use fewer words and better words. I studied Ernest Hemingway's writings on how to write a book, and one of the things I found is that he made everything terse and tight, and he won a Nobel Prize for writing, starting from nothing. So I went back. I had a 300,000-page manuscript. My first book, I went down, and I took out something like 150,000 words simply by tightening it all up. Now, there's a book that you need to read if you want to be successful. It's called The Elements of Style by Strunk and White. This book was written in 1928. It still sells 600,000 to a million copies a year. Every writer, good writer that I know, rereads it before they begin writing a book each time. It's only a few pages, and it gives about 103 lessons on how to write. And it's still one of the best pieces of writing ever done. It's called The Elements of Style by Strunk and White. If you're a serious writer, you should read it from cover to cover over and over again. And each time you do, the quality of your writing will improve and become more publishable. Now, number three in writing nonfiction, develop an interesting plot that holds together and moves forward quickly. It should read like an interesting or exciting story that you're telling someone as fast as you can. You want the reader racing with you to the next paragraph. They're excited. That's what made Harold Robbins so successful, by the way, is what he would do is he would write almost all dialogue. Dialogue moves very fast, and it pulls people through. People love dialogue. Number four, in nonfiction, develop each character, or don't introduce the character at all. The reader should be able to visualize your characters and have a sense for how they will behave and what they will do. Many writers will introduce a character at a particular part of the book, and then the character never appears again. Sometimes when they make a movie, they do the same thing. The character will be introduced and never appear again. But if you look at a good movie, you'll find that every single character is very distinct, very well developed. In a book, every character is well developed, so that they have a particular personality and role in the book. And number five, if you're writing fiction, is you should have a point of view, some idea that you want to get across as a message as a result of reading your book. You know, Moby Dick is a fiction book that has a very clear message. Don Quixote, a fiction book with a very clear message. The best-selling fiction books have a message, and the message is of courage and persistence and determination and domination, the importance of love. There's some kind of message that comes out, and you use this plot, the narrative, the characterization to get that message across. So I always ask, what are you trying to say with this book? What is your reason for writing this book in the first place? What message do you want to leave the reader with? Now, one of the things I learned before I began writing is this, is a writer is someone who cannot not write. A writer is someone who cannot not write. And so, therefore, if you have to write, if you need to write, the question is why? What is the message? And if you're not crystal clear about the message that you want the reader to get, it's impossible to get a publisher. It's impossible to be publishable. A person should know clearly when they finish the book exactly what was that message. Okay, next point is get a literary agent. Many people think, well, I'll just send out letters to publishers or I'll send out manuscripts. No, 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 no. It's like trying to sell your house by yourself in a competitive market. It's very difficult to do, and you're not going to get a great deal. You've got to get a professional realtor. So this was the turning point for me. I finally found a literary agent and convinced her that I had at least three books in me that publishers would buy. One of the things he said is, you know, publishers are only interested in authors who, if they publish a book and it sells well, they have follow-up books to publish. So I immediately said, well, as a matter of fact, I can take my material and break it into three subjects, which I did. And so she took that to the publisher. But when you get a literary agent or a publisher, your work is just beginning. Remember, they succeed or fail in their careers, make money or not, get promoted or not, based on the success of your book. So to find a literary agent, here's a very simple technique. Read Jeff Herman's book, Guide to Book Publishers, Editors, and Literary Agents, 2009. You go on to Amazon, and it's Jeff Herman's Guide to Book Publishers, Editors, and Literary Agents, 2009. This is the Bible of the industry. This will tell you every single publisher and every literary agent that works in the country and the books and types of publications that they're interested in and what they've done in the past and how to contact them and their names and phone numbers. And everything that you need to do to get a literary agent is actually explained in Jeff Herman's book. So now we start with the query letter. Now, the query letter is really important. This is what I have to use. Even though I have these publishers, I have to do a query letter for every new book project I come up with, and most of them are rejected. And it's rejected because it's not the right book in the right publishing cycle, or they have something else on the same subject or so on. So the query letter is what opens the door for you. It must be an attention-grabbing, arresting description of your book, opening with a power paragraph that stops the editor or literary agent cold. Many editors and agents receive dozens of query letters per day. Yours must stand out, like book advertising copy that triggers an immediate desire for the product. Have other people critique your query letter and give you feedback. Be prepared to rewrite it several times until it grabs people when they read it. Make it clear what kind of a book you are writing, how many people and what kinds of people will read the book, and why your book is different from other books on the subject. Before you mail, not email, a query letter, telephone the literary agent or publisher to determine the specific person to whom it should be addressed. Never send it to whom it may concern, or never send it to the name of a company. Always make sure that there's a person, a name. You can even call and say, I would like to send you a query letter, and I'd like to get the exact spelling of the name of the person to whom I should send it, and they'll give it to you. Remember, they're always looking for that next big book, so it's not that they will turn down your query letter, but make sure it goes to a specific person. This information, by the way, is in Jeff Herman's book, or it's in The Writer's Handbook, which is published each year. The Writer's Handbook is the Bible of the writing industry. It has countless articles written by writers and publishers on how to write books and how to get published and so on. These are the tools of your trade as a writer, is Jeff Herman's book, The Writer's Handbook, and The Elements of Style. Now, when you get a favorable response from your query letter, they'll often say, well, it looks interesting, send us some more information. you'll be asked to write a proposal to describe your book. Here are some of the questions they will ask and which you must be prepared to answer. Number one is, in one paragraph or two, what is your book about exactly? What's it about? And you must be very thoughtful about what your book is about. Number two is, how will a busy reader benefit from your book? What is the predominant benefit or result that a reader will get from reading your book? Number three, what other books deal with the same subjects? And one of the things I learned in my early studies is, don't ever say this book is unique, there's nothing like it, because it's simply not true. No matter what you write, there's something has been written on the subject, and maybe even better than you. There, many times, by the way, a book just simply fades away over the years, and your book may not be as good as that book, but it'll still become a bestseller. So always talk about the other books that have been written that deal with the same subject. Now, number four question that I will want to know the answer to in your proposal is, how is your book different from similar books? How is it better? How is it superior? How is it unique in some way? What will make it stand out? And remember, your publisher is very concerned about what a critic or a reviewer might say. And the last thing they want is a critic or a reviewer to say, this book doesn't cover any new ground, or this is old material just simply repackaged. They want the reviewer to say, wow, this is a great book, a new approach, a different concept, and so on. Now, question number five is, who exactly will read your book? What ages, occupations, income levels, aspirations, and how many potential readers are there? I never write a book proposal without having at least 1 million potential book buyers. And then I think through, who are all the people who would read this book and benefit from this book? And I then guessed some statistics. Salespeople, there are 15.9 million salespeople in America. At least 1 million of these would benefit from this book. That immediately gets my sales books published, because it's aimed at a huge audience of almost 16 million potential buyers. So even if only a small fraction of a percentage buy, the book is still a top seller, as they say. Now, sixth question they'll ask is, who are you? What is your background, and why are you qualified to write this book? You know, people say to me, I want to write a book on success. You know what my first question is? What have you succeeded at? I want to write a book on making money. How much money are you worth? I want to write a book on successful business. How many successful businesses have you built? Well, this shocks most people, because most people have not made any money, have not succeeded at anything, and have never started a business, and they want to write a book on the subject because they think it will be helpful to other people. So the first thing the publisher wants to know is, why are you qualified to write this book? The seventh question they ask is, what other books have you written, and how many copies did they sell? Whoops. Now, if you haven't written a book before, you can always talk about the number of people you've worked with, the number of people you've spoken to, the number of people you've influenced. You can even talk about the number of books you've read on the subject and how your treatment is different because you're in the industry. The eighth question is, how will you help in marketing and selling this book? In other words, what will you do? What will you contribute? The rule is that the publishers will do very little to help you to market the book. What you offer to do, whether it's signing books at book sellings, whether it's doing radio interviews, whether it's doing print interviews, whether it's selling them on your internet site and so on, what you will offer to do has an enormous impact on whether they'll take your book at all. And number nine, give a table of contents of the book and a brief summary of the contents of each chapter. I submitted a book which, by the way, has now sold several hundred thousand copies and is moving toward the 1 million copy mark. And what I did is I wrote out 21 different chapters. 21 is one of my favorite numbers. I use books with 7 chapters, 12 chapters, or 21 chapters, with a couple of exceptions. So I had to write out 21 chapters and then a description of what would be covered in each of the 21 chapters in my proposal. And on the basis of that, the publisher took it and has now published it worldwide in multiple languages. So you have to be able to give a table of contents of the book and a brief summary of the contents of each chapter. Now, this is especially important in nonfiction books, business books, and self-improvement books. Remember, the publisher is looking for a way not to get hurt. They don't want to get hurt, so therefore they're looking for a way to exclude you out, not exclude you in. They're looking for reasons not to publish your book, not reasons to publish your book. And you have to help them overcome that natural, been burnt at the fingertips experience that they've had in the past by giving them all the reasons why this is a safe decision for them to make. Now, number 10, finally, your proposal should include a sample chapter, usually chapter 1, so that a literary agent or publisher can judge if you are a competent writer. I've had books that have been sent to me for my review, and they are so badly written, I've had to write back and say, look, I can't help you with this book. It's just simply not written well enough. And sometimes they come back and they say, what suggestion do you have? And I said, well, if you're not a writer yourself, then you have to hire a co-writer. And that's going to cost you $20,000 or $30,000 to have a professional writer rewrite your stuff. By the way, if you look at some of the best-selling books on the bookstands, they were not written by the authors. Most of the books that politicians publish, books by Jack Welch and so on, none of these were written by those people. These books were all written by professional writers whose names are well-known in the publishing industry but don't appear anywhere in the final book. So now, once you've gotten acceptance of your proposal, be sure to write your book with the following points in mind. Number one, be sure that it's a professional-looking manuscript. Let me give you an example. When I wrote my first book, it was page after page after page of copy, and it was sent back. And I realized that people just bogged down reading endless pages of copy, so I developed a technique, and that's I break up my copy with subheadings every two or three paragraphs. You can always find a subheading that just leads into the next paragraph. And so I call them Cracker Jack books. A Cracker Jack book is a book that you can read two or three paragraphs at a time. And so people can pick it up and read it, put it down, pick it up, read it. Make it easy for your reader to read. And so break it up. Make sure it's professionally produced so that it's easy to read, especially for the initial publisher or editor. Number two is back up what you say. When you make a statement, you must be prepared to prove it. Be very careful with sweeping statements like, you know, 29% of people do this or 37% of people do that. Be sure that you've got the statistics or don't use the statistics at all, because every single publisher has what is called a fact checker. And the fact checker gets paid for how many facts they can check you on. And it's absolutely amazing. I make a casual statement. I say that salespeople who make more calls make more sales than salespeople who make fewer calls. I immediately get a response back from the fact checker. On what do you base that? Where's your proof? Do you have any scientific evidence? I want to smack them right in the mouth. But their job is to challenge every single statement that you make. So be sure that you have the ability to back it up. And surprisingly enough, I can always refer them to the research. I had one publishing company who also has a business magazine, and they came back and said, where did you get this statistic? I said, I got it out of your own magazine. And they said, oh, sorry. And they hung up. Number three is be accurate, especially regarding numbers and quotes. There's a famous story called Acres of Diamonds by Russell Conwell. Now, Russell Conwell gave this talk, Acres of Diamonds, between 5,000 and 6,000 times over the course of a 20-year career. I recently saw a reference to this Acres of Diamonds where it said he gave the talk more than 50,000 times over the course of his career. Well, that means he would have to have given the talk about 10 times a day for 25 years. The statistic was completely out to lunch, and a person reading that would say this is a person who doesn't know what they're talking about. Number four, use proper punctuation. Look it up and study it if necessary. That's really important that you be really good with punctuation. And it doesn't take very long. There's elements of style. We'll talk about that. There's books on punctuation. But a properly put together a punctuation, whether it's a comma, a colon, a semicolon, and so on, very important. But the wrong punctuation actually makes it look terrible. Number five, be concise. The rule is use the fewest number of words possible and the shortest, simplest words to express your point. The rule is never say it in three words if you can say it in two. Never say it in two if you can say it in one. Never say it in a three-syllable word if you can say it in a two-syllable word. So in other words, you wouldn't say the way to utilize this idea is. You say the way to use this idea is. Because the shorter and terser the words, the more gripping the reading when they do it. And that's what you'll learn from The Elements of Style by Strunk and White. It's wonderful. Lessons. Number six, check for spelling errors over and over again. What I do, of course, is use spell check when you use your computer. And just check it over and over again and keep looking for opportunities, because spelling errors stick out like a missing tooth in a person's face. And number seven, reread it once more word for word before you send it off. One of the things that I find out is once you reread it, walk away from it for a day or two and then come back and reread it again with a fresh mind. Now, negotiating the best book contract. When you get a book contract, you've now got a literary agent who found you a publisher. The publisher likes the book and is interested in going ahead. Now they come down to the contract negotiations. Now, in all business, the job of the editor or publisher is to get the book for the very least amount of money. And your job is to get the very most. So step one, get the contract and read it through carefully, line by line. Remember, the contract was not written for you. The contract was written for the publisher. And many new authors, and I've seen this happen, are so happy that they've got a publisher that they just assume that the publishing agreement, the contract, is boilerplate, and they just sign it. And then they learn later what a terrible mistake they've made. Number two is beware of vague clauses like electronic rights or tricky terms and clauses. I remember when I got my first contract, it said that all electronic rights will be held by the publisher. Well, I had already published an enormous number of my material in audio programs and video programs. And what they were saying is they would own all electronic rights, past, present, and future. So I stroked that out. And they got very angry about that. And I learned why. Because another major speaker had gone to them and published a book, and he had just flown over this particular clause. And then they went back to his audio publishers, where he had sold more than $1 million worth of programs, and they demanded that they pay the publisher all the royalties payable from all the sales of all the audio programs based on this material or anything like the material. It cost my speaker friend more than $300,000 that the publishing company just scooped because he had not queried what does electronic rights mean. And sometimes they say all electronic rights currently known or to be invented in the future. If you see something like that, stroke it out. Okay, number all electronic rights exist or to be invented in the future are things you want to keep for yourself. You want to be able to record it. You want to be able to sell it to someone else. For instance, I have contracts with publishers who publish my books. I have contracts for overseas agents who publish them overseas. I have contracts with audio publishers who I work with separately, and I publish my books with them audio recorded, completely separate contracts. So you must be careful to hold on to those. Now, international rights is another thing you have to be careful about. International rights, the convention is you should get 50% of all royalties received by the publisher for your book published in another language. I'll give you an example. I published a book and I got an advance from a New York publisher. They sold the overseas rights to Korea for $30,000. But because I had the proper contract, I got $15,000 of that. That's a lot of money. They sold the overseas rights to a German publisher for $20,000. Now, I was speaking to another publisher recently who puts into his contract is that overseas royalties will be paid at the same rate as American royalties, which is between 10 and 15%. And he said most of his authors sign it without even thinking about it. And so instead of getting 50%, they get 10 or 15%. I said, why on earth would they do that? And you know what he said to me? The publisher said it's because they're just stupid and they don't read the contract. And if they're going to be stupid and not read the contract, I'll take advantage of them. I said, well, that's pretty honest because that's the way publishers are. Another thing they'll put in a contract is right of first refusal. That means they'll say the publisher has the right of first refusal on any new books that the author comes up with. Well, don't agree to that. Is cross that off because you want to have complete freedom to publish your book with someone else. If your book is a top seller, another publisher can come along and offer you vastly more for the second book. And this happens all the time. And finally, one clause where I got tripped on, where they say that if they publish more than one book, all royalties from any book will be go against the advances from any other book. And I missed that completely. It just never dawned on me that a major publisher would do that. So I had two books that were selling well and a new book, and I didn't get any royalties from the third book. It hadn't been out long enough. Well, they were taking the royalties from that and applying it back against advances from previous books. So be very careful about these clauses. Now, the third point is guard your rights, especially copyright. Sell as few rights to the publisher as possible. I worked with a publisher recently, and I signed all the agreements. Book came out, and I didn't even realize that they had copyrighted my book to the publisher, not to me. Now, remember this. 100% of the time, you own the copyright to your books. You never, never give that away. Because if you do, it means that whoever has the copyright can do whatever they want with that book for history, forever, and for 70 years after your death. So I went back to them. I said, what on earth is going on here? They said, we slip that into every contract. I said, well, this is impossible. And I was going to do a second book with them. They said, well, this is our standard procedure. And I said, it doesn't really matter because we share the royalties and everything else. I said, no. I said, I'll never do that again. They said, well, then we can't work with you. I said, good, I'll go with someone else. They came back 2 hours later and said, okay, we'll give you the copyright. But I was just amazed. I couldn't believe that they had taken my copyright. It's almost like taking your child and adopting it and moving it away across the country. It was so surprising. So go through every single line in the contract and make sure that you give away as few rights as possible. Number four, be sure that every agreement and every change is in writing. Never agree to anything over the phone. Okay, we'll make that change. Make sure that it's in writing as an addenda and signed by both you and the publisher. And finally, number five is write your own contract terms. Just cross out certain sentences and insert your own. Sometimes I'll just stroke them through, use a ruler, stroke it through, and write in your own contract terms. It's amazing how flexible publishers are. Sometimes they're not flexible. Sometimes they are. But your job is to ask for the very most. So next point with regard to self-publishing is get the highest and the best advance possible. The standard advance for a new book by a new author is about $5,000 or less. Many publishers offer no advances at all because of the high risk involved. There are many publishers I know that don't offer any advances. They will offer you 10%. Standard is 10% on the first 5,000 copies, 12.5% on the next 5,000 copies, and 15% thereafter. That's pretty much the standard in American publishing. Overseas, they offer you anything from 5 to 15%, and every single country has its own, what you might call, standards or provisions for publishing. Some publishers, however, if you are really successful, will cross off the bottom brackets, 5%, 10%, or 10%, 12.5%, and they'll give you 15% straight across the board from the very first sale. This only happens if you're a successful author. So try to get the very, very most. In 80% or more of cases, the advance is the only money the author will ever receive. Remember, 80% of books, no matter how well-intended, fail at the box office. So therefore, negotiate for the very highest advance you can possibly get. Now, the best situation is when your literary agent gets two or more publishers bidding for your book. If there's only one publisher, and they have to tell the truth, by the way, who else is bidding for the book? They say, we don't have anyone else. Then they'll say, all right, and they will use the fact that you have only one publisher who's interested. They'll use the fact to squeeze you really tight. So, but if you have more than one publisher, they have what is called an auction. Usually the auctions are done by conference call, and several publishers will call in at a certain date, certain time, and they will all discuss and offer, and the literary agent will conduct the bidding. And the publisher who bids the most will get the book. If you can get this kind of a situation is when you get the very highest possible advances. But again, unless the book is really a popular title. I'll give you an example. The book The Horse Whisperer, which was made into a movie with Robert Redford, was written by an advertising guy who decided to quit advertising, moved out to the West Coast, and wrote the book. And people read the book, and they were so overwhelmed by the book, he got something like six or seven publishers bidding on the book, and he got several $100,000 advance for his first book, The Horse Whisperer. And this does happen. If the book is really good, this can have people say, wow, that's a good book. And they'll say, I want that book, I want that book, and so on. But I'm just talking to you about the very best of all scenarios. They don't often happen that way. Now, the most powerful word in publishing is the word ask. The good news is that your literary agent is highly motivated by the 15% commission she receives or he receives from the advance and the royalties, and your literary agent will work very hard to get you the most possible. It's almost like a real estate agent gets their percentage based on the sales price of the house, so they want to get that very highest price possible. By the way, literary agents charge 15% of the advance and 15% of whatever you receive thereafter. That's the going rate. If you deal with a co-writer, sometimes they will want 50% of the advance and 50% of the royalties thereafter as well. The difference between a co-writer and a writer for hire is that you pay a writer for hire an hourly rate, and they sign off and walk away afterwards, and they get nothing in terms of advances and royalties. This is a very interesting area that you can learn about and that your literary agent will explain to you. Now, self-publishing. Self-publishing. Many authors, especially first-timers, cannot find or attract either an agent or a publisher. I know very successful speakers and writers who had top-selling books who've worked in the wilderness for 2, 3, and 5 years looking for a literary agent for the next book. They just simply could not find one. Or if they did find one, most literary agents, the bottom 80%, are mediocre. The literary agent could not find them a publisher. So they had to go to another literary agent. And finally, they have to go to self-publishing because they have no choice. Now, if you believe strongly enough in your book, this is a route that you can take. I don't recommend it, and I've never self-published a book. I've always published with publishers. And there's a reason for that, is a publisher who uses their own distribution or an independent book distribution agency can get your book in front of every book buyer, every bookstore, every book distributor in the country. There's more than 13,000 bookstores in the U.S. alone, and a publisher has the ability to get your book into every store. A publisher can go to Barnes & Noble, and Barnes & Noble can immediately order 5,000 or 10,000 copies, which has happened with me several times, and put them into every single Barnes & Noble in the country almost overnight. So therefore, a publisher has the ability to distribute books is why you want to go to a publisher. Selling them yourself is very difficult. In book selling, in books, maybe 10, 20% is the book, 80% is the marketing. 80% is getting the book in front of people who will buy it. So you pay a very, very high premium to the publisher for getting for selling that book. Here's a story. Some years ago, an author speaker named James Redfield wrote a book called The Celestine Prophecy. And he was unable to find a publisher for his book, so he self-published it and sold it at his seminars and through the mail. Well, the book became very popular. You may remember The Celestine Prophecy. It sold an enormous number. After he had sold several thousand copies, he then went back to a couple of publishers and said, look how many copies I sold. And they said, wow, we had no idea it would sell that well. And one of the publishers grabbed the book from him. This time he grabbed the book, published it professionally, distributed it worldwide, put it into every bookstore, multiple languages, and eventually sold several hundred thousand copies and made the author rich. By the way, on a book, average it sells for $20 to $25, you will get between $1 and $1.50 per book. Always build that into your calculations. Because when people say, well, would you travel across town and do a book signing? At a very, very successful book signing, you may sell 10 books. And so you have to start off. It takes an hour to get there. You have to set up a table. You have to wait around. People come to the store. You have to sit there and smile. Sometimes they ask you to give a talk on the book. And then afterwards, you have to autograph books, which they've already bought. And as a result, you will have earned back $10 to $15 of the advance that you got. So one of the things I learned early in my career is refuse to do book signings. I just don't do it because it's just simply not a good use of time or money. Now, if you want to self-publish, you must get a book by Dan Poynter, P-O-Y-N-T-E-R. It's on internet, on Amazon. It's called Self-Publishing Manual, 16th Edition. Now, Dan is a friend of mine. He's the recognized guru and authority on self-publishing. His ideas can save you a fortune in time and treasure. Dan is the man. He does seminars. He does webinars. He does audio programs, and he's done this book. And he'll tell you stuff about self-publishing, where to publish it, how to do it, how to price it, how to sell it, how to market it, that will save you a fortune. And many people have that used Dan Poynter's ideas to self-publish books that then were picked up by publishers that then became top sellers. So if you can't find a publisher, and don't be surprised if you don't, at least initially, be prepared to self-publish a small number of copies. And you can publish a book for anywhere from $1.50 to $2 a copy if you publish 2,000 to 5,000 copies. That's not a lot, especially since you can then price them at $20 to $25. Now, finally, if you believe in yourself and your book, resolve in advance that you'll never give up. Let me tell you a story. Some years ago, a friend of mine, this speaker, told me he'd come up with a book idea and he was going to sell 1 million copies. Well, I was a little skeptical, but I encouraged him to go for it, and I wrote a testimonial for his book for when he wrote it. And I didn't hear from him again. I learned later that he followed through and wrote the manuscript. He then had the manuscript reviewed by several friends and cleaned it up several times and finally got the manuscript. And then he then submitted the manuscript to 144 different publishers. And they all looked at the manuscript and they said, nah, there's no market for this kind of a book. They turned him down. It wouldn't sell. Thanks for sending it in and so on. He got a literary agent. The literary agent tried to sell the book and gave up. He approached publishers personally, and they gave up. He approached his friends, and nobody would do it. Finally, he went to the American Booksellers Association annual convention, where all the new books are displayed, and he had a few copies of his book, a few manuscripts, on one of the tables of the other smaller publishers, and a small publisher in Florida that was only publishing newsletters on health at the time came up and looked at it, and they talked. And my friend was so desperate to sell his book, he said, I'll do anything. And this publisher said, well, if you buy 10,000 copies, I might publish it. And he said, I'll buy 10,000 copies. I know there's a big market for my speaking audiences. So he agreed to buy 10,000 copies. He only learned later that by buying 10,000 copies, the publisher made a profit, whether or not the book ever sold at all. Well, so he bought 10,000 copies. He now had a warehouse full of books that he had to sell. And so every day for 6 months now, my friend and his co-author went out and did something to promote the book. They phoned radio stations. They phoned television stations. They phoned reviewers. They sent out book copies. They stood on the street and handed them out. They visited the local newspaper and handed out copies to everybody who was a writer in the book. Every single day, they did something for 6 months, and they never missed a day, 7 days a week. Finally, a friendly reviewer at the Los Angeles Times, who liked the guys and liked the book, he wrote a nice story about the book, and it started to move in the bookstores. As it started to move, they started to get orders, which went through their original publisher, and other people read the book and reviewed it and picked it up, and the demand started to pick up. And not only did he sell a million copies, but my friend, Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, who had written this book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, went on to sell 100 million copies of Chicken Soup for the Soul books and become the most published authors in the world and some of the most published authors in history. And why? It's because they went through the self-publishing route, then they went through the little publisher route, and then they promoted the heck out of it, and they made it successful. Now, I'm not saying that this is going to happen to you, but you never know. So the more different things you try, as Wayne Gretzky said, you miss every shot you don't take. If you want to be successful, cast a wide net. Try lots of things. Read everything you can about how to write well. Read everything you can about how to publish a book. Just do everything that they tell you to do, and be prepared to be turned down over and over again until you get the right combination of ingredients. And at that point, ask them to publish it. Ask for higher advances. Ask for them to commit money to promoting the book. Ask for the electronic rights. Ask for everything that you possibly can, and never stop asking. And if you do that, my prediction is if you never quit, you'll be like the other great authors who were turned down over and over again, sometimes year after year, who stuck it out and finally got through, made a sale, and became best-selling authors for the rest of their careers. And what hundreds and thousands of other people have done, you can do as well. Good luck, and thanks for listening. Okay, we can now turn the lines back on, and I'll answer any questions that anybody has.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you would like to ask your question, please press star zero on your phone now. Once again, in order to ask a question, you must press star zero. Please allow me a moment to collect some names. Okay, Brian, we're ready for our first question.
Wonderful.
Okay, our first question is from Doug. Doug, please state your question.
Yes, Mr. Tracy, I appreciate the conference and you taking questions. My question was involving a literary agent. I had kind of been under the impression that the literary agent was going to be able to help with contract-related questions, and it sounds as though that's really pretty much going to be up to the author.
No, it's just something for you to be aware of in terms of the contract. The literary agent is usually quite astute at that. But sometimes, for instance, my first literary agent didn't know anything about electronic rights.
Mm-hmm.
She was totally focused on the written word. And so what she did is she accepted their contract that got all the electronic rights, past, present, and future. Well, a friend of I told you in a talk a few minutes ago, a friend of mine had made over $300,000 from the audio sales of his book, and the publisher stepped in, waived the contract in the audio publisher's face, and got all $300,000 and paid my friend 10%. Instead of him getting the full $300,000, he got $30,000. It cost him $270,000. And in my first contract with a major publisher, they tried to do the same thing for me. But I had already heard what they had done to the other speaker, and I was aware of it. And when I told them I wouldn't sign it, they literally had a fit. They literally had a fit. They were so angry. They'd already agreed to the advances and everything else, but they thought that they were going to scam me. They even said that this is a deal breaker, and they wouldn't talk to me for 2 months. And I told them to go and pound sand or something else. And they finally came back, and they agreed to publish the books on the original terms with no audio rights. But they were really, really tipped over because that was their trick. The trick was to find popular speakers who had audio programs and just kind of neatly kind of tie up the rights. And my literary agent agreed to that. It was me who found it and found out. And they said, oh, don't worry. It doesn't matter. It won't make any difference. But it turned out that it would have been a disaster if I hadn't found out. So therefore, always accept responsibility and never accept the term that you don't understand. Say, what does this term mean exactly? How is this term applied? I mean, what would it mean in this kind of a situation? And remember, everybody's acting in their best interest. The literary agent just simply wants to get the advance, the biggest advance possible for the sale of the book. And sometimes they will skirt over the other issues. Like the other issue I had, where a literary agent sold the publication rights, and they just went quite white over international distribution. My book went into 12 languages. And you know what I got? I got pennies. Where I should have gotten dollars, I got pennies in royalties because the literary agent had not written into the contract the 50% clause for overseas rights. They said, well, it'll be the same percentage as American sales. And that cost me thousands and thousands of dollars. So just, you know, just accept responsibility for being sure that you understand the meanings of each term.
Wonderful. I appreciate that. That gives me a lot of guidance.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question here is from Fred. Fred, please state your question.
Thank you, Brian. That was a wonderful call. I'm actually hoping to see you in a couple of days in Vancouver. I have a question regarding, you mentioned a lot of great books. One of them I didn't catch was a self-publishing manual, did you say, by Dan
Poynter. Poynter. P-O-Y-N-T-E-R.
Is there any other books that you also recommend that from other, because I'm interested in self-publishing.
No, just read Dan Poynter's book. It's the state-of-the-art book.
Excellent.
Anything else you read will just rehash what Dan teaches you.
Okay, and then you talk about The Element in the other one. Okay, great.
Yeah, the Elements of Style, yes.
Okay, excellent. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, our next question here is from Lisa. Lisa, please state your question.
Hi, Mr. Tracy. Thank you for taking my question. I admire your work, and this is a very informative teleseminar. Here are my questions. They're pretty much related, but you write so many books per year, and do you have a strategy or a plan that you use, you know, so you can write the books, you know, so many per year? And how do you conduct your research on the subjects you write about? And how do you stay motivated to finish?
Well, lots of questions.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
No. What is your name?
Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa. Let me answer your questions because all the questions have been answered. First of all, if you go to my website and you go to free gifts, there you pull it down and there is my outline. So many people ask me how to write a book. So I wrote down 20 points, just like a recipe on how to write a book. And I've had people who've been struggling with a book for years have their book finished within 90 days, just following that recipe. In addition, we have expanded that, and there is a CD called How to Write a Book. And there is a complete explanation, an 8-page summary of the CD that goes with it that you can order off my website. And this is one of the most popular programs we've ever produced because it takes people who have been struggling and shows them exactly how to write a book, the process and everything. With regard to research, what I do is I read an average of about 3 hours a day in various subjects that I write on. I read on airplanes, I read in the mornings, I read in the evenings, I read in hotel rooms. And then what I do is I reach a point of critical mass where suddenly where at a certain point I know so much about the subject. And also I design seminars because I'm a professional speaker. So designing seminars forces me to write down the key points. Giving the seminars forces me to expand on those points. So when I'm ready to write a book, I literally have a library in my head. I can sit down and write a 300-page book without reference to notes. Because I've done so much research and reading and explanation of the points. If you are going to do writing, again, read the book, How to Write a Book. It's one of the most popular books, and it shows you how to write nonfiction, and it shows you how to gather the information and how to organize the information into chapters and then how to organize the information in sequence within the chapters. And it's a very simple process that's used by the top writers in the world. So read the books, How to Write a Book and How to Get Published.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. Our next question here is from Lee. Lee, please state your question.
Hey, Mr. Tracy. I appreciate your time this afternoon. Great teleseminar. And this is actually part of me taking your advice. I spoke with you live in Nashville a couple weeks ago at the seminar in the doorway. I don't know if you recall that conversation. The two questions I had for you today are, number one, what about specialized markets? Because I hear you talk about casting a wide net. You also spoke to the number of people. You referenced the number of salespeople in the world, and if only a certain percentage of that bought, then it would still be a success. What about specialized markets where it may not be? Does that just absolutely rule out the book being published, and are you limited to self-publishing, or is there some specific tactic or, for lack of a better term, pitch that you could put on that in hopes of getting that book published?
Well, I've written books for specialized markets, but what I do is I get an agreement by the specialized market to buy and pay for the books up front. Then I write the books and deliver the copies to them. You never want to write a book and then go out and try to sell it. The other thing is that bookstores, you have to understand, are assaulted by 200,000 new books a year, plus old books and books that are coming out in paperback, and they're just dying. They're just drowning. And fewer people are reading, in one case, and more books are being written. And so a bookstore has to be really convinced, a book buyer has to be really convinced that there's a big enough market for what you're selling. So with specialized books, sometimes you can write the book, like I wrote a book for senior citizens, which was sold through a major company that sells financial planning to senior citizens. And so it was a perfect book for them, and they put their name on it, and they were able to sell thousands of copies or sell or give away thousands of copies to a specialized market. But think through the marketing. Remember, 80-90% of this is marketing. Only 10-15% is writing.
Yes, sir. Thank you for that. Also, you mentioned contract terms that you may include. I was curious, would you mind sharing maybe an example of what would be a contract term that you find important enough to actually write in?
Well, one of the things I do is there's certain countries that I have established publishing relationships in. So I will exempt those countries from the publishing contract. So they'll say, the publisher will ask for worldwide rights, which is okay. And I'll say worldwide rights, except for these countries. Because I keep these rights so that I can sell them separately to the people I'm already working with. Another thing is electronic publishing rights. One contract I just did recently, a publisher took my book, Eat That Frog, and created a coffee table book, a beautiful colored book with excerpts from the book on Eat That Frog, which they've sold 10,000 copies of. So therefore, I had to have a special deal for a book that is excerpted from this book and what the royalties would be there. So just write them in. And it's very much done sort of on an ad hoc basis. Let's say, for example, I did a deal recently, and they said that 100% of sales would go through them. I said, no, is everything you sell, but I retain the right to sell, in this case, the audio version of my book to my own clients on my own website. And so they wept and cried about that for a while and said, okay, you can sell on your own book on your own website, and we'll have the rights to all other audio rights. Another thing that they came up with was they paid a certain amount for a hard CD copy of an audiobook and a 10%, a fraction, for electronic books. However, we already sell ebooks, and both audio and written, and we know that the market has gone from 10% to 50%, and there's zero cost in delivering a digital book. So I rewrote the contract. I said, no, the royalties will be the same on ebooks, electronic books, audio and written, as they are on published audios. No. So we went back and forth on that, and they finally agreed. They just didn't realize that I had that level of knowledge and sophistication. Their job is to write the agreement in such a way that it benefits them. So just go slow. Ask for advice. Authors call me all the time and say, what should I do here? What should I do there? And I share, as I'm sharing with you, I share my own experience. Another thing, by the way, which I didn't put into this, but always have a special price at which you can buy your own books. You see, I sell thousands of copies of my book through my own markets. So I insist that I can buy as many copies as I want for 25% of retail. If it's a $20 book, I can buy as many copies as I want for $5. The first contract that I wrote, that I signed, one that I didn't know what I was doing, I managed to save myself on the electronic rights. But I didn't realize that they said, oh, yes, you can have it for 25%. But then they wrote in for minimum quantities of 500. So the next time I wrote it up, it's minimum quantities of 10. And then they wanted to sell me my books at 50% off. Well, I said, at minimum quantities of 500. I said, well, wait a minute, if I'm a bookstore and I buy one book to resell, I get it for 50% off. You're saying as the author, I have to buy 500 copies to get 50% off? Yes, well, that's our standard contract clause. So you have to fight with them. And now, so I get most of my books now, I get for 25% of retail, and sometimes I can get them for even 20% of retail. But you have to negotiate that right at the beginning, if you feel that you have a market, that you can sell them yourself, because that can be a source of tremendous profitability for you.
That's a great example. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Our next question is from Loretta. Loretta, please state your question.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Tracy. This is Loretta. I've enjoyed your teleseminar immensely. My question for you is, I'm writing children's books, and it's actually a book series. And I wanted to know if you had any additional advice pertaining to my particular market, children's books.
No, I won't lead you astray with a glib answer. I don't. However, there are books that I have seen called How to Write and Publish Children's Books. There are professionals who have been doing it for years, and they've written down exactly what you need to know to sell children's books. And so what I would say is hie thee quickly to the nearest bookstore, or actually go on to Amazon and just write children's books dash writer into the information bar and click on it, and they'll give you the best-selling books on how to write children's books.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay, our next question is from Pamela. Pamela, please state your question.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Tracy, if you're an unpublished author, in my particular case, I'm a psychotherapist, have a lot of knowledge about the things that, you know, improve people's lives. Would you recommend trying to do an e-book before a normal, you know, written book?
Well, it's funny that you should say that, because I have a couple of books. As I told you, I have 7 books in my queue, and I was just talking to a publisher recently, and he said, why don't you produce it as an e-book and sell it through your own channels and demonstrate there's a market? And I hadn't really thought about that just until this is just last week. And I thought, I can do that. Geez, I can do that tomorrow, because all my books, I have to keep the manuscripts. I can do that as an e-book. So that's what I'm going to start doing from now on. I'm going to write it, polish it, and sell it as an e-book and see what happens. Because what I have found, by the way, and many people have done this as a strategy, is they take it to a publisher. The publisher says, I'm not interested. So they publish it as an e-book and send it out. And one strategy is they give the first chapter free. So they promote it to as many lists as they possibly can, and they offer the first chapter free. And if the person wants the book, they can come back and get the rest of the book for $5. Then they sell several thousand copies if it's a good book, and then they go to a publisher and say, look how many I've sold. And the publisher will rip it out of your hands. So that's a good strategy.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's a good idea then.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, our next question is from Stefan. Stefan, please state your question.
Yeah, hello, Brian. This is Stefan.
Hello.
Thanks a lot for doing a very, very good deal. I read many of your books.
Thank you.
I wrote a book. It's titled Diets Don't Work. And I would love to send you a copy if possible. And then maybe if you like it, I wanted to ask you if you could write me a little testimonial.
I would be pleased to. I always write testimonials for my friends who've written something worthwhile, and that's a good one. But hasn't that title been taken, Stefan? Diet Forever?
Not that I know of.
Before I ever write a book, the very first thing I do is I go to Amazon, and I put the title in, or I go to Google. It's even better. You go to Google and you put in the title, and you'd be astonished. Almost every good title has been taken. And you can walk in and you could say, well, I've got this book called Diets Don't Work. And they'll say, well, do you realize there's 3 other books with that title? And you go, huh?
Oh, interesting, interesting. See, I found one book, but I don't know if that is exclusively taken or not.
Well, here's another thing about, Stefan, there's another thing about titles, is you cannot copyright a title. You cannot copyright a title. In other words, I wrote a book once, and it was called Success is a Journey, and then I learned that another publisher, another author, was coming out with the same a book with the same title, totally different subject, at the same time. And so we communicated with them, and we said, hey, wait a minute, we've got a book on Success is a Journey, and you shouldn't use the same title. They said, well, we're going to anyway, the heck with you. And they did. And so the book, both books came out. My book went on to sell tens of thousands of copies all over the world. That book failed. But the point is that you could not stop a person from using the title. So, like, I could say, Stefan, I like that title. I think I'll write a book called Diets Don't Work. And I could write a book.
So we should partner up then.
Yeah. Most amazing darn thing. So, but anyways, if you send me a copy to my office address, which is on the Internet, if it's a well-written book, I'd be pleased to write you a testimonial.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Then I have a second question. I would like to advertise my book with your name. Basically, that the person who buys my book can download an e-book, one of your books. And I don't know if you would be up for that, and I would be willing to pay per download.
What I'd like you to do is please just send it to me in an email, because if it makes sense, we would do it.
Let's do it that way.
Okay, by the way, there are three books called Diets Don't Work.
Oh, there are three books even?
Yeah, there's three books for sale on Amazon. Diets Don't Work by Bob Schwartz came out in September 2002. Diets Still Don't Work by Bob Schwartz. Diets Don't Work by someone else. And so on. So it doesn't matter because the book came out in 2002. You can come out with the same book.
Okay, very good. I'm pleased to hear that. I'm very pleased to hear that.
Okay.
So you like the title. I like that. Everybody so far likes the title.
Yeah, it's a good
book. By the way, I sent it to Gary Renard as well, Disappearance of the Universe. I don't know if you heard about his book. It's a bestseller, also over a million copies.
No, I haven't.
And he likes it a lot, actually.
Wonderful.
It's more. It's not about diet. It's more about the psychological background. I'm a psychotherapist as well, as the lady before.
Well, I certainly agree. I've always taught the key is to think thin.
And very true.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yes,
definitely.
Summarizes your book. There you go.
Okay.
Thank you, Stefan. Next question.
Thank you very much. Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question here is from Porter. Porter, please state your question.
Hi, thanks. I'm speaking to you from Copenhagen tonight. Brian, it's good to hear your seminar. Thanks so much for it.
Hello, Paul.
I'm getting, by the way, exactly the same advice you were giving to Pamela regarding e-books, and that is a good place to start, particularly for new authors, because, you know, one of the things that publishers find interesting about that is they don't have to worry about remainders. If your book just falls flat, all they're out is the cost of producing an e-book. And they're publishers now who I think are helping people get out there first that way. So it's good advice. Thanks for that. The question I had for you is, have you worked in fiction? Because I read your excellent books, your nonfiction work all the time on my Kindle and in ebook formats. But do you work in fiction as well?
No, I never have. I've thought of it. Everybody has.
That book in the drawer, right?
Yeah. Everybody has an idea of a great fiction book. I have a whole bunch of ideas. I just never gotten to them.
Yeah, well, I hope you have a chance to try it sometime because you're a great writer. I think you can do it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you.
Okay, our next question is from Jack. Jack, please state your question.
Good afternoon, Brian. This is really great. Thank you very much for doing this. My first book was published by accident. I never intended to publish a book, and it got published. But the next one I want to do on purpose.
I see.
And I'm just wondering, when you say you have seven books in the pipeline, do you work on all seven simultaneously, or just do you do one?
I've worked, usually I try to focus on a single book. But what I've done, sometimes I will lay out a book following my process. I have several steps. I'll go through the first and second step, and then a publisher will call. Like last year, a publisher called and said, you know, the market's going through turmoil because you write a book on reinvention, how you reinvent yourself as you change careers and go through life. And I said, okay, so I stopped the work that I was doing, and I worked on that book until it was complete. And now I'm going to go back to something else. I've written another book, which I stopped work on, which I'm now going back to. So usually I write a book through until it's finished and send it off. But it's amazing how often a publisher will call and say, would you write a book on this subject? And I'll say, sure, and I'll stop work on what I'm doing and write a whole nother book, which takes a long time.
I can imagine. And do you typically dictate, or do you hand type your
Well, go to my website and where it says free gifts.
Yep.
And click down. It says how to write a book, and that'll tell you step by step exactly how I do it.
Okay.
And it's a very simple process, but rather than take up time here, it's 20 steps.
Gotcha.
And it's real simple. And if you even more serious, get the CD and the written material that go with it, which is an expansion on that list. It goes into much greater detail. Save you countless hours in writing a book.
Okay. I'll send you a copy of mine as well.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Our next question is from Joe. Joe, please state your question.
Hi, Brian. My name's Joe. I'm a bookaholic.
Yeah. Hi, Joe.
Greetings from Indiana. I met you up at Nightingale Conan about 15 or 20 years ago and again in Maryville. And it's delightful to talk to you again.
Well, thank you.
I've just got a couple questions. Well, first of all, I love Something for Nothing. Just thought that was great. I got the hard copy and the CD so I could listen to it.
Thank you.
Got one compressed question and one simple question. The simple question is, how do you go about getting blurbs for your book when you're getting ready to be published?
Well, it's the most interesting damn thing. Just ask people. I remember when Harvey McKay wrote his book, Swim with the Sharks, he sent out requests to everybody. Larry King, General Norman Schwarzenegger, Joyce Brothers, Tom Peters. He just sent them out. And most people, I sent a copy to Lee Iacocca and to General Schwarzenegger. And they both wrote testimonials for me. You write them a nice letter, say, I've always respected and admired you. I've written a wonderful book. I'd really appreciate it if you'd write, you know, a nice word. And when people ask me for testimonies, I say, send me a table of contents, the introduction, table of contents, first chapter, so I can see and I can write an intelligent testimonial. And so they do. And if it reads well, very seldom, but I would say 1 in 10, they send me garbage. And I explain I can't write a testimonial for this. But in most cases, if it's nicely written, I'll write a nice testimonial. And very often, I had a writer, I've had this many times, but a writer recently wrote to me and said, you know, I wrote my book, and I struggled and struggled and struggled. Nobody would pay any attention, and I was just about to quit. And then I wrote to you and asked you if you'd write a testimonial, and you did. And I got the testimonial just when I was at a low point, and it perked me up, and I went back out, and I called my literary agent, and I said, I've got this testimonial. The testimonial, the literary agent called the publisher, read the testimonial over the phone. The publisher published the book. She said, I'm now a successful published author because of your testimonial. And so I hear that every so often, so I always write testimonials for my friends, just in case it will help them.
Okay. What are the usual six objections you get from a literary agent, and how do you overcome them?
Well, I just answered them all. The person has not thought out who it's for.
Okay.
The person does not have a good title. The person has not written it well. They have this idea. It's the most amazing thing. They go to a literary agent and they say, well, I've got this idea. I want you to find somebody to write it. I want you to sell it and find somebody to write it and send me the royalties. You idiot. No, it's not how it works. The literary agents are inundated with people who want their services. So you have to go to them with something that they think is readily marketable.
It's a sales job.
Yes.
Okay.
And just do the things that I talked about. Pick the title, pick the subject, make it easy. The rule is always in sales, make it easy for your customer to buy. Don't make it hard for them to buy.
Well, it strikes me at the beginning of every book, every author faced many, many pages of blank pages, and it all started with that one word.
That's, well, and you have to be, you know, the rule is, and you'll see this in my instructions, it's just get it down. Just get it down. Sometimes people think, well, I have to make it so it's timeless prose. No, you don't have to make it timeless prose. All you have to do is just get it down and then go back and re-edit it. They say it's easy to write, it's hard to edit. So just get it down there just as fast as you can. Some people use stream of consciousness. Any professional writers will say, I will write 2,000 words every day. I'll get up in the morning, I'll write 2,000 words a day. And sometimes they'll throw it all away, but they write 2,000 words a day. And at a certain point, if things are going well, it clicks, and you start to write good stuff.
I heard Arthur C. Clarke this was in 1970, he said something about writing 1,000,000 words and throwing it away. and then you would be ready to start writing.
Well, that may be true. There's one of the most famous lines that I ever heard about writing was by Elbert Hubbard. And Elbert Hubbard was one of the most prolific writers in American history. He wrote literally 20-volume sets of books. He wrote so many books, he had to establish his own publishing company to publish his books worldwide. And he was once asked, how do you learn to write? And his answer was this: the only way to learn to write is to write and write and write and write and write and write and write.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always repeated that. The only way to learn to write is to write and write and write and write and write and write and write. And you probably do have to write a million words before you learn to write and write and write and write.
I'm about to cross the Sahara. You know what that means.
Good for you. It's, and by the way, it's always further than you thought. It's always further than you thought.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Questions? Do you have any more questions?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Koya, you're up.
That's me. Yeah, that's me. So basically, I have two questions. The first one is more a business question. What are the margins in the publishing industry like on fiction?
Margins for whom?
Margins, yeah, exactly. I mean, for the publishers. So I mean, suppose they...
Well, the way it works, the numbers in publishing are the publisher
on a book.
The publisher marks it up seven times from its cost. So if a book costs $3 to publish, then the publisher will sell it for $21.
All right.
If the book costs $3.25, they'll sell it for $25, something like that.
Okay. Well, of course, I mean, I understand it depends very much on the number of the printing and so on, but okay, so this is a rule of thumb. And another question, you've already noticed I'm not a native English speaker, but I mean, what do you think about publishing, especially first book, in something that is not my native language? Because, I mean, some markets, I think, are more difficult than, for example, writing in English, because there's more readers and books are thinner when they're written in English than, for example, writing them in German or French. What do you think about this?
Sind Sie Deutsch?
I'm German indeed, yeah.
Yeah, so ich habe viele Freunde, die bringen die öffentlichen Bücher auf English, but the best thing is to make it a bestseller in Germany first.
Yeah.
And then translate it over. But if you're not going to do that, because your English is quite good, then have a fluent English writer edit the book so it's nice and clean.
Okay. No, because, I mean, I think that the German book might seem to be quite difficult, and also simply because editors buy licenses from the U.S. and the U.K.,
yes,
which are already a success, and so that's why I think it's even more difficult to publish in Germany, for example, than it is publishing in those dominant markets like the American one. And that's just why I was wondering your opinions on this. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Viel Glück.
Thanks.
Okay, our next question is from Talani. Talani, please state your question.
Hello, Brian. I'm a great admirer of your work, particularly your audio work. I listen to audiobooks every day when I'm going to work.
Thank you.
And my question is, when you're writing a book, promoting your first book, because I'm a beginning writer, do you go for the strategy that you promote the book as much as you can, even if it's not selling, and try every strategy, or do you try to promote several books at the same time and see which ones are taken by publishers first? Which strategy would be the best?
Well, I come up with a book idea, and then I put it together exactly as I described. I put together a query letter, and I send it to the publishers that I know, and see if I get a response. Sometimes I'll just simply email the description of the book, because they've published my books before, and they'll come back and they'll say, yes, they're interested, give me more information, or no, they're not. And then we'll go from there. And so I have this idea of a book. Like I've got this idea of a book that I think is a great book. It's called Get Over It and Get On With It. And it deals with how you deal with previous problems in your life so you can get over them and get on with the rest of your life. And I've co-written it with my daughter, who's a psychologist. I think it would be a fabulous book. So I just run it up several flagpoles. I say to this publisher, would you like this book? Would you like that book? And so on. And sometimes they'll say, well, yes, we like it, but not this year because we have something else. Or what else do you have? I say, well, I have another book on self-discipline. Well, we'd be more interested in that this year than next year. So it's horse trading. You go back and forth.
Okay. And so would you start approaching publishers before you've written the book fully or after you've written the books fully?
What I do is I take the idea, the query letter, and I send it out because you don't want to spend 100 or 200 hours writing a book that nobody wants to publish.
Obviously,
so what you do
yes.
is you get someone who's interested in the book first, and then you write the book.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question is from Doug. Doug, please state your question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Tracy. This, again, is Doug from Texas A&M. You helped me with that agent question. And I have a further question. You talked, love your information about imperative verb for a title, and I'm already thinking about retitling one of my nonfiction books. But I also write fiction, and I was wondering if you had any advice on captivating titles for fiction.
Well, again, you have to write a title that grabs people.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to have a subtitle that grabs people. Often, I have found you can use a simple title like "Create Your Own Future." It's one of my titles, and then is "How to Achieve Everything You Want Faster Than You Ever Thought Possible."
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the subtitle is what grabs people. But the main thing is if you can have a title that causes people to sort of open their eyes quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Watching somebody else read, if somebody else is reading the book, they say, well, that looks like an interesting book. What's in it?
Right.
And what they do, by the way, there are now computer programs. I did a book last year, and what they did is we had about four or five different potential titles. And then you take, and I gave them 30 names of people that I know. They took about 70 names of people they know, and they put it into this computer program and send it out and ask people to evaluate the titles and the subtitles. And within 24 hours, and sent them all back, and then the computer program organizes them, and it told us that the title that we were thinking of was not a good title, but a title that had come up was the best title, and then this best subtitle. So it's done electronically now.
Hmm.
Yeah, you take four or five different titles and subtitles and send them out, and people will mix and match them, and you come back, and 70 or 80% of people say, if it had this title and this subtitle, I'd buy it.
Okay, so what your advice is then, what works with nonfiction can also work with fiction.
Yes.
Okay. So, well, that's wonderful, and I appreciate your openness to letting us send you stuff, and I would love to send you some proposals that I have, so you can see a title and help me with advice on a working title, especially for my fiction.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. It's just, as much as I like you, I wouldn't encourage you to send it to me. I just simply don't have the time.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But what you do is once you find a literary agent, then send it to all your friends.
Right. Wonderful.
Okay.
I'll do that. I appreciate the advice.
You're welcome. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take another couple of questions, and then we're on our way.
Because then he said, I wouldn't encourage you to do that. Because
okay, looks like we have... one more question from Jack. Jack, please state your question. Okay, no question from Jack. Jack, you on the line?
I asked a question before.
Okay.
Okay, Brian, looks like we don't have any further questions in the queue here. If you want, we can give everybody instructions.
Well, thank you very much, everybody, for being here. And... We will send you information on our next teleseminar, and I wish you the very best of success in getting out there and writing a book and getting published. And if you have a good book and you send it to me, I'll write an endorsement for you. So thank you very much, all of you. Talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.